Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. Please email any questions to me, David Lundgren at David.Lundgren, L-U-N-D-G-R-E-N, at HancockBank.com. And joining me this morning on the call is Jeff Tangus and Luther McDougal, both investment directors for our firm. John Portwood is on vacation. He's actually in Europe. And then Greg Hudleski, who's normally with us, is visiting clients in the Lake Charles area. So it's just going to be the three of us this morning. And Luther, speaking of Europe, I know John's over there. Hopefully he'll have a good report for us when he gets back. But let's go ahead and start there and maybe give us any updates or any goings-on in Europe, please.
All right. Let's start with some of the economic numbers that have been coming out of the Eurozone. For the first quarter of 2013, the Eurozone GDP shrank by 0.9%, which was the sixth consecutive quarter of contraction. So the Eurozone is in a fairly long and maybe even further prolonged recession. Unemployment also came in rather weak. It reached a new high of 12.2%. So the Eurozone continues to struggle. The central banks in Europe are continuing on their easy monetary policy. There's even talk of bringing their so-called Federal Reserve rate into the negative territory in order to do whatever they can to keep things going over there, because we still continue to see some struggles. On the bright side, what we've not heard lately is the talk of anybody actually trying to exit the euro, such as Greece. We actually have a few countries that are going to enter the euro probably sometime next year. Overall, I would say that the news coming out of the Eurozone is kind of blasé but boring. It's no longer the topic du jour. Instead of Europe, I think things are more focused on our own domestic economy, and we'll touch on that briefly. But we also have some issues, not so much in the Eurozone, but in the Mideast, where we have continued political problems in Egypt and Turkey. We have the continued saber-rattling between Iran and Israel, and we have a civil war in Syria that looks like it's about to spill over into the neighboring countries of Lebanon and maybe even Israel. So the Eurozone has kind of settled down. I don't think the problems have gone away, but right now things are kind of quiet over there.
All right. Thank you, Luther. Jeff, we're going to have a summer swoon for the economy here in the U.S., talk a little bit about the economy here.
Sure. Good morning. It looks like this year, for the first time in a couple of years, we're going to avoid the summer swoon or the salt patch. We've given it a couple different names. The economy, the U.S. economy, continues to show considerable improvement in terms of employment, and GDP remains pretty stable despite a lot of cross currents and other factors at the governmental level that would slow the economy down a little bit. But generally speaking, the first quarter was a very good quarter for the U.S. in that it came in at about 2.4% annualized on a GDP basis. So that's a little bit better than around the 2% number that we've been talking about. It came in a little softer, mostly because of some of the government sequestration and the fiscal cliff, some of that noise that's coming out of Washington. But generally speaking, it was a pretty good quarter overall. We did have and are having several things that are affecting the U.S. economy right now, mostly at the governmental level. The sequestration, which, of course, depending upon which side you sit on, some people thought it was going to be another big negative in the economy. The other side of the aisle said, well, maybe not. It should, maybe it's not that big of a deal. After a little bit of noise initially, it looks like the sequestration is it's affecting government expenditures, federal government expenditures, but beyond that, it's really having just a minimal effect, certainly nothing catastrophic, as was anticipated. We still are digesting the payroll tax hike, although that's kind of moving farther into the past. And then certainly around the beginning of the year, the fiscal cliff issues are well behind us now. So while on one hand you've got government spending, which is actually slowing, and that's a good thing in a lot of ways, you've got a consumer on the other side that feels real good about the economy. Consumer confidence, as measured by the Conference Board and actually the University of Michigan consumer confidence measure, came in very high, actually the best consumer confidence number since 2008. So the consumer will continue to keep this economy going because they do feel good, mostly as a function of what's going on in the housing market. Housing prices are starting to move up. We had a Case-Shiller number that came out in the last month that showed the 20 major markets across the country were up about 10% year over year. So the housing market is getting traction. We continue to see good activity on the new construction front. Sometimes it shows up more in permits and sometimes more in housing starts, but generally speaking, if you smooth those numbers out, you show a nice increase in the housing market across the country. So that goes a long way to making consumers feel much better about things. The other bright spots in the economy right now, auto sales are very brisk. There's been some reports out recently from Ford and GM that vehicle sales are doing very nice. So that's a big part of the economy as well, and also an indication that the consumer feels good about things. Inflation doesn't seem to be an issue. Certainly oil prices have been contained. Gasoline prices, if you go to the pump, you notice that they've been relatively stable and towards the lower end of the range lately. And so all this really, the economic activity combined with the slower government spending has really really improved the budget deficit at the federal level. The budget deficit is coming in lower than was anticipated, again, because we're spending less and the economy is doing better. So, again, that's more good news. So on a lot of fronts, the U.S. economy is doing well. The counterpoint to all that would be the manufacturing side, which exports a great deal. Manufacturing, I think, is about 12% or 15% of the overall economy. And because of the weakness that Luther cited in Europe, we're not exporting nearly as much. And so we've had several numbers that have come out. Capacity utilization, in other words, the percent of factories that are running less than their full capacity, the capacity utilization numbers have dropped, which means that we're not using all of our assets as much as we could. Also, the Institute of Supply Management manufacturing number turned in a negative number of 49, which 50 means basically break even. 49 means manufacturing is contracting. That's a pretty modest number, below the 50% number, but it does indicate that manufacturing is weak and that, again, we're just not able to export to around the world and primarily to Europe like we would like to. So that side of the equation remains somewhat weak. So on balance, the news from a U.S. standpoint, from the economy, I think is pretty good. We're looking at the second quarter, the quarter that we're in right now, being much weaker than the first quarter. Because of some of the sequestration cuts, we're going to dip down to something below 2% growth probably in the second quarter. and then we'll improve third quarter and fourth quarter. So by the end of the year, we should be somewhere around that 2%, maybe a little bit more growth for the U.S. economy, which is, of course, what we've been predicting and talking about for some time now. We're basically in a 2% growth world for, as far as the U.S. is concerned. But it really is a tale of two cities in that you've got the domestic economy, which is doing quite well, and the international, which continues to struggle.
Thanks, Jeff. And just to be clear, that so for the second half, you know, we're less than a month away from the start of the third quarter. Are we still kind of looking for real GDP in that 2-3% range? Is that kind of, I guess, the street's best guess or estimate on what to expect in the second half of the year?
Yeah, the third quarter should come in about 2.25% growth, so something over 2% annualized. And the fourth quarter will likely come in something a little over 2.5% annualized. So the quarter that we're in now is certainly the weakest quarter of the year. First quarter was very good, and every other quarter will likely be above 2%. So we should see a little bit of a pickup.
Okay, great. Thank you. Luther, I guess some interesting news over the last couple weeks in regards to the Fed testimony and Fed minutes. There was some talk of tapering. And if you could, for our audience, maybe talk a little bit about what that is, what it means, when and how will it happen, at least as best you can guess, and what's the likely impact?
All right. Let's kind of start with the Fed and its current mindset or what it's trying to do. A few years ago, the Fed started lowering interest rates, and by doing so, the thought process is that if you can't earn any money on your money in your checking account, savings account, or whatever short-term investment you have, then you're more likely to, A, spend it, B, to invest it into something else that will earn a higher rate of return, or C, some combination thereof. Over the course of time period, they lowered interest rates, or the Fed funds rate, down now to where it can't go any lower. The target is between 0 and 0.25. It's actually at about 0.10 now. All of that work helped to maybe stimulate the economy a little bit. We ran into the problem that it wasn't quite enough given what was happening globally. So the Fed jumped into what's called QE, or quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is another way to help stimulate the economy. It does something fairly similar. In this particular case, what the Fed is doing is spending approximately $85 billion a month to buy bonds, specifically treasuries and government mortgage-backed securities. In doing so here, it's the same thought process in that by taking the bonds out of circulation, what you do is you put cash back into circulation. And then you have that same question of, well, do you just leave it where it is, earning almost nothing? Do you reinvest it in another security, or do you try to invest it into something with a higher rate of return, hopefully something productive economically? We've been in that mode for some time now. At the last Fed meeting, there was some mention of tapering. I'm not quite sure who first coined the phrase, but what it means is that they may begin to lower the amount of bonds they purchase each month, which in effect is a reduction, or if they stop buying altogether, an end to easing and a beginning of a tightening of monetary policy. So tapering really would be just stop buying as many bonds as they do now. When will it happen? I don't even think the Fed knows. We have several conflicting reports. Bernanke dropped what's now called the Bernanke bomb, which mentioned the decline in tapering. At the same time, or shortly thereafter, he also mentioned that they could continue to purchase bonds, or if the economy continues to remain weak, increase the amount of bonds that they're buying. But the market's not taking it that way. The market's taking it in that the Fed will begin to reduce its purchases of government securities and thereby removing the monetary accommodation currently into the system and starting to tighten a little bit. When will it happen? Assuming that we are into tapering and, as Jeff mentioned, the economy does fairly well, if not robust, but moderate, it looks like maybe by the September Fed meeting, but in all likelihood probably closer to the December Fed meeting. After the comments that were made by Bernanke, the markets, Fed fund futures, or when the market is predicting the first Fed increase in interest rates, moved all the way in from August of 2015 up to January of 2015. So whether we actually see tapering or not is questionable, probably sometime before year end if we see it. But it's still up in the air. I really don't think the Fed knows exactly what they want to do. It's going to depend upon the economic numbers as they continue to come in throughout the course of the summer.
The one interesting thing, you know, it was the bond market actually got kind of exciting in the month of May. We saw the largest one-month change in yield since 2009. The 10-year was up almost 50 basis points. It went from 1.67% to roughly 2.13%. So I guess, first, is that related to the tapering comments? And do you think we've broken out of this trading range that we're in for so many months? And does this continue to where we get to maybe 2.5% this year?
Well, with the fall or the lack of or the reduction of Fed buying, the likely impact is, and as we saw, interest rates will increase. But there were a number of factors that helped move interest rates up last month, and let's kind of talk about those for a minute. It wasn't all just Fed speak. During the beginning of the month, the April payroll numbers came in a little bit stronger than expected, and the revisions to past history were on the positive side. That helped push interest rates up. That was followed by deterioration in the yen in the first couple weeks of May. And as the Japanese are very large buyers of Treasury bonds, that put some pressure on yields, moving them up. And we also had, during the course of May, a very strong stock market. And with the stock market indicating that the economy is improving, that didn't bode well for bonds either, so that pushed rates up a little bit further. So rates had already risen a reasonable amount by the time Bernanke made his comments on May 22nd. But interest rates did move up about 50 basis points during the course of the month. I think, yes, we are out of that trading range. I think there's probably a fairly high probability that rates will settle back down again right now as the news is kind of out and everybody knows that tapering may begin sometime before the end of the year. There's no need to panic, at least not yet, in the bond market. But we'll have to see what the numbers are, particularly this Friday when we get a new payroll employment number. As far as how high rates will go, it really depended upon the economic numbers coming in. Could be reached 2.5% this year. I think that's a fairly easy target to hit. The question is, will we remain at a 2.5% rate? We've got to remember that even if the Fed does taper its bond purchases, the Fed funds target rate is at 0 to 0.25%. Europe is relatively weak. Emerging markets are not very strong. China is slowing down. So there's still not a lot of potential for growth out there. So even if the Fed does taper, and there is talk of an increase in the Fed funds rate, there's just not a lot of inflation or growth out there to push interest rates up. But we have broken out of that range. We'll probably stay somewhere in the 2% area going forward. And this is just my personal opinion, not that of the bank or anyone else, and that probably by the end of this year we could be looking closer to 2.5%.
All right, great. Thank you. I'm going to spend a couple minutes just talking about the stock market. And You know, we've had a really amazing run, and May was no exception. For the month of May, the S&P 500 was up 2.3%. The Russell 2000 was up 4%. And that brings our year-to-date numbers, S&P 500 up 15.4%, Russell 2000, which is a small cap index, up 16.5%. So, you know, really good five-month period. To be in the mid-teens is exceptional. And I thought, you know, I'd start off by, you know, telling you first why. You know, where are we? Why is that occurring? And a lot of these points we've discussed on this call and in previous meetings, but just to, you know, emphasize or point out their contribution to stocks. And we have a healthier and a more confident consumer. Jeff talked about the consumer confidence numbers. Consumer net worth, if you just look at assets less liabilities, we're clearly through the 2007 peak, so we have a healthier consumer. We've seen slow and steady improvement in employment. We can debate and have debated the quality of jobs being added, but nonetheless, the trend is moving in the right direction. Unemployment continues to move downward, and we continue to add jobs. Faster pace would be nice. But still, again, the trend is favorable. Jeff also talked about housing. That's a tremendous lift to the stock market. I think we finally have reached the point where the market is confident that we have seen a bottom in housing. So there's more stable pricing, less inventory, all good signs that lead to a healthier economy and, in turn, a healthier stock market. And then, you know, one interesting, you know, we've been in kind of this upward trend ever since 2009 for stocks. But surprisingly, fund flows have still been more into bonds than stocks. And we've actually, for several years, have seen steady outflow into equity mutual funds. That trend has reversed here in 2013. Not by any great magnitude, but it's the first time where we've seen some pretty consistent inflows into equity mutual funds. Lastly, M&A activity has picked up. I think in the last week of May, we saw, I don't know, probably half a dozen deals get done. Again, another positive for the market. Those are all important, but the last factor, and I think it trumps everything else right now, is a huge and still expanding global easing cycle. And, you know, I feel like we talk about the Fed and quantitative easing a lot, but with good reason. I really do think it's been a big driver of the market rally that we've seen. And, you know, you can just, you know, last week when the talk of tapering was heavy in the market, you saw the market sell off, which to me, you know, really just leads even more to that argument that a lot of it's being driven by the QE program. And you saw it for QE1 and QE2. While those programs were in place by the Fed, you saw the S&P 500 rally. You know, in its simplest terms, basically the Fed is injecting that money into the economy. That money needs to make it somewhere, and a lot of it is ending up in stocks, which is helping to drive it up. So along those same lines, this business, we always have acronyms, and a couple of acronyms that I heard for the first time over the last couple of weeks, I think really do a good job of explaining what's happening. One of them is TINA, T-I-N-A, and it's there is no alternative to equities. And the other one is FOBOR, and it's forced buying of risk. And basically the theme is with interest rates being as low as they have been for as long as they have been, people are finally starting to feel like they have no other alternative than equities. And that's why you're starting to see more inflow into equity mutual funds. People are getting tired of earning, you know, 0% in overnight or short-term monies. And people are finally becoming a little bit more confident. We see it with our own client base. People are starting to enter the equity market more. So that's healthy, and you know, that's all. These are all contributing factors to the run that we've seen. So having said all this, I know I sound like a raging bull, and if John Port was here, he'd probably squirm a little bit in his seat. But the key, and you know, why we're neutral on stocks, and I think this is really important for everybody to understand, is that over the last 12 months, the S&P, or the price of the S&P 500, has risen 30%, while earnings have only grown about 6%. So, you know, you're in an environment, when you look at the price-to-earnings multiple, we've gone through a tremendous period of multiple expansion. You know, 12 months ago, the PE on the market was in the 13 to 14 times area. Now we're at 16 or 17 times. Not, you know, we're not where we were in 2000. We were in 28 to 30 range, but we're getting a little bit stretch. And as that number gets more stretched, and you've heard John Port would discuss this, we lose our shock absorber. The market isn't able to handle unexpected news as well. And the other thing that is somewhat of a concern is that at some point, and you heard Luther talk about it, the Fed is going to be out. They're going to slowly... the quantitative easing program that we're in is going to end. And what we've seen with both QE1 and QE2, they're coincident with market declines. So, you know, I guess to sum it all up, you know, we may have some more legs. We hope we do to this market. But we think the rate of growth is going to slow, and we're probably going to see more of a sideways move to our market than is, you know, than we've seen over the last several months, and that'll probably be a healthy thing. So, you know, again, we've had a great run, and you know, we're not bearish on stocks. We're just cautiously optimistic given where we are from a valuation perspective. So, again, if anybody has any questions, please email them to me. I think we have time for one question. And Jeff and Luther, I'm going to throw this question your way. The question is, if we do see long-term rates get in that 2.5% range, is that a big enough move to where it maybe slows the economy? Either one of you guys want to take a stab at that?
I mean, I will. We got to remember that long-term trend for treasuries is probably in the 3-4% range, which would be, you know, long-term inflation of around 2-2.5% with, say, a 1-1.5% premium on top of that. No, I don't think so. 2.5% is still relatively low. It might have more of an impact on the housing market than other places, but even at 2.5%, You're looking at mortgages in the maybe 4.5% range, maybe even 5%, which is still a very reasonable rate for a long-term loan. It will have some impact, if not in actuality psychologically, but I don't think a 2.5% rate is high enough to truly damage the economy.
Yeah, and I would concur with that. The most important aspect of a 10-year treasury is the fact that that's what mortgage rates are generally priced off of, and as Luther indicated, that would still leave mortgage rates historically in a pretty attractive range. And the only reason I think 2.5 on a 10-year looks high right now is because we've just been abnormally low. I mean, from a historical standpoint, 2.5 is still a very low interest rate. So I can't imagine. It would certainly have some impact on the housing market. It would have to have some, but whether it would be a dramatic impact, I sort of doubt it. And most of the people who are going to refinance, not necessarily move, but just take their old higher interest rate mortgage and refinance, will likely either have done it or are in the process of doing it if they can, given the new higher housing valuations. So I think that the strength in the economy is more than likely going to be more self-sustaining, and the 2.5% is not likely to be a dramatic retardant.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We look forward to talking to you next month.